Kodiak is actually a pretty easy goat hunt as far as terrain goes. Yeah, you're still going to catch them in some pretty gnarly cliffs that are hard to maneuver, but as far as like brush, on the north end of the island, you can still get into some pretty thick brush, but a lot of guys fly in and hunt them on the south end of the island, and it's pretty open. So like we were in Sound, and a lot of those units in the Sound are their quota units.
Okay.
So if you're not out there somewhat early in the season,
they close.
They close. Then like this year, me and a buddy actually parked one of our pickups on each end of this mountain range, and we ended up hiking 50 miles straight through. And, you know, it was a 10-day hunt. You know, some days you did 5-6 miles, some days you did 12. It just kind of depended on the on that day and the terrain and what you saw. But that was pretty cool. It was pretty fun to cover that much country. I learned a bunch of stuff that I'd never been into before. So I figured with that week of me being solo, I headed into some country I'd never been into, and sure shit, I ended up finding the legal ram, and he was by himself. So that was pretty rare. And I spent 3 days with him and learned a lot. Just babysat him and watched him.
Hey guys, before we get into this next episode, I want to share a couple things with you. First, I am happy to announce the new daysinthewild.com is finally launched. Everything is in one place: my guide services, the podcasts, access to my blogs, etc. So go check it out, daysinthewild.com. If you've been following the show lately, you know that we've partnered with Bushnell and Primos. The awesome thing about that is that if you use promo code STL02, you will save 15% on anything they sell. Doesn't have to be the stuff that I use. I've been using the Bushnell trail cameras for years. I did a couple of reviews over the years, and Bushnell always came out on top. They're excellent. And I know you've heard me talk about Primos calls and how good they are, but I've also been using their ground blinds, and they're awesome. I don't know if you remember Double Bull blinds, but that's a Primos product now, or has been for a while. I also tried out a set of their shooting sticks, and for standing shots, or you know, using for clients when we're predator hunting, or my kids that need it when we're spot and stalk and have to get in close on javelina or anything like that. It's like a really good tool. I love them. They're quick setup and they're steady. Lastly, do yourself a favor and go check out the lineup of shooting bags, glassing pads, and other accessories that Phoenix Shooting Bags puts out. Go to phoenixshootingbags.com. Use promo code John Stallone, all one word, and save 20%. Rifle season is upon us, guys. You'll thank me later, I promise. Go check them out. Hey, don't forget to give us a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. It helps me keep bringing you guys content for free. It definitely helps out our ratings and reach more people. So thanks again for taking care of that. Appreciate it. Now let's roll into this next episode. I got Zach Kenner on with us, and Zach's gonna share a couple hunting stories with us. Might be about coos. I don't know. I don't think you ever told me about that one really good buck that you got. What was it, 2 years ago?
He's an 80 incher. He's pretty nice. I mean,
I remember seeing one that was, maybe it was just a really good picture. I thought it was like over 100.
Oh, yeah. I definitely take good pictures. Well, I should say I only show the good ones.
Yeah.
No, I mean, he's a nice buck, mature buck, but really he's only like a 2x3.
Yeah.
I should say a 3x4 if you count his eye guards.
Right.
So mid-80s frame, you know, maybe even low 90s frame, but he was missing that whole point, you know, and then... So just an older, mature buck, but just didn't quite have the points to score higher, you know. But yeah, I mean, I call them basket bucks.
Yeah,
you know, they're shooters. You know, when you're hunting with a bow in that country, if it's a basket buck, I don't even really care what it scores. I'm going after it.
Yeah, for sure. So. I don't know. I'm the same way, man. And that's probably why I don't have any 100-inch bucks. I've guided probably, I don't know, 5 bucks over 100 and 109, is my lowest. And then myself personally, I think my biggest is 98.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's a good buck, but he's not, you know. My biggest with the bow is, I think, 91. So it's like, yeah. I'm like your buddy over there. I shot the very first time I went coos deer hunting, I shot a buck with my bow. Very first time I went hunting them, and like on like the second day. And then I went like 6 or 7 years after that without killing another buck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he was screwed up.
It was
one of those where it's just, yeah, it was a frustration buck, you know, and he was going home the next day. So it's like, I mean, I told him though, if you shoot that spike, you know, you can't put in for any tags, but
yeah,
I don't know. He had fun.
That's good.
That's all that mattered. But yeah, I mean, that 1 year, it was actually like 3 years ago, I think. Three of us actually all tagged out on our freaking bucks with our bow. So it was kind of crazy. Mine was like right at 80. And then my buddy's was, how big was that one? 87, mm-hmm. I think. And then my other buddy just shot a little fork and horn just to fill his tag. You know, it was like, he had a couple of good shot opportunities at some, you know, 78 inch bucks. So That was a pretty good trip, yeah. So it was just pretty crazy, though. You know, we'd drive down there and all tag out. Like, yeah. That doesn't happen.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
So, and then it's like we go this trip and had, I don't know, I guess he did kill that spike, but at the end, in the back of my mind, I really feel like we didn't kill anything.
Yeah.
You know?
Did you guys have javelina tags, too, or no?
No, we didn't. And really, the only reason we went that first week is because my dad drew an Audad tag in New Mexico.
Oh, cool.
And so we were down there for a couple days and did that. And then we just hopped across the border and tried our hand at the coos since we were already down there.
Oh, yeah.
So it was cool. Got to see, you know, like I said, I was hunting some new area and checking it out. Just, I don't know. It's like it all looks the same, you know, when you get down there. So it's like, oh, there's mountains. Let's go check them out.
Yeah. Oh, because you could pretty much throw a dart, you know, and you'll find deer down there. Everybody's always like, oh, you know, what unit should I go to? I'm like, literally, dude, just throw a dart at the map. It's like,
find some mountains and go.
Yeah. Especially coos deer. Muley is a little different, but
yeah.
It's getting harder and harder to find good mule deer.
Oh, yeah.
It's just,
yeah, and all those coos deer just point at the mountains and go.
Yep.
No, it was fun. Like I said, I'm not going back unless I go back the 10th or later, I think, though. Just give that a go.
Yeah.
But
so you're living in Alaska now, right?
Yeah. Yep.
How's that?
I've been for 3 years, I think, now.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's been a while since we talked.
Yeah, it's I'm getting my money's worth, to say the least. I haven't killed a sheep the last two seasons myself, but I've been hunting them pretty hard, and it's like, it's good and bad. You know, it's bad obviously because I ate some tags, but it's good because I hunted way more. You know, I mean, the last two seasons, I think in each season I hunted, you know, close to 40 days.
Wow.
Just for sheep and not like necessarily in a row, because it's like, you know, you're talking 4 to 5 different trips, you know, 5 to 10 day hunts and switching up spots, you know, all the time. So it's like, you know, you're coming out, you know, repacking, removing spots for a couple days and then, you know, heading back in or waiting out a rainstorm, you know, kind of thing.
Right. Now, were you targeting doll or stone or
what? Yeah, it's all doll.
Okay.
There's a couple pockets of Fannin/stones in Alaska, but they're hard to find.
Is there? Aren't there in the southern half? Aren't there Rocky Mountain bighorns too?
No, not in Alaska. No, that's all in Alberta.
Okay, that's Alberta. Okay, yeah.
Alberta's got all three, or Alberta/Yukon.
Yeah.
You get up there towards the north, but. No, so it's fun.
Did you do any goat hunting?
Miles. Yeah, I did. I shot my first billy this last season.
Oh hell yeah!
That was awesome.
I missed that.
I went to Kodiak my first year there, my first year hunting as a resident, and shot, me and my buddy shot a nanny. That's what was in front of us, and it was kind of like a now or never situation, and we both shot nannies, just kind of both our first goats, you know, chalk another species off the list kind of thing. And I'm still looking for like a really nice billy for, you know, a good mount, right? So I didn't, you know, obviously mount the nanny. Well, I am going to do a backpack mount with her, I think.
Okay.
But not like a life size or anything. So then I shot, you know, I went on this goat hunt, and man, it was the first time I ever got to like pick through a handful of goats. We hunted them out of a boat. And so you can see, you saw quite a few boats or goats from the boat, but they're up on the mountain quite a ways. And, you know, even when you'll beach the boat, get out, set up the spotter, because you can't see nothing on that boat as it's rocking, you know?
Oh, yeah. For
But, man, they're tough to judge. It was interesting. So then we finally found what I thought was a pretty nice billy and made a beautiful stalk on it, came up the backside of the mountain on it. And, it's one of those situations where you come up over just to the side of him and he's bedded below this like knob, 30 yards below this knob.
Oh, wow.
And of course the bow hunter in me is like, man, I wish I would have brought my bow.
Right.
Because it would have been so easy. But anyway, so yeah, I laid the hammer on him, and he was a beautiful three-year-old billy. And it seems from what I've gathered on, you know, handling a bunch of goats, is when they turn 4 or 5 years old is when their body just almost doubles in size.
Okay.
It's like they're definitely a breeding age as a three-year-old, but they just haven't fully matured. Mm-hmm. And, but the problem with those billies is a lot of times they're by themselves. So you have nothing to compare them to. Just in general.
Oh, just in general.
You know, even though that billy, like, you know, has a handful of nannies and kids below him, he's still kind of by himself.
Right.
You know, so not intermingling, and you can't really tell how big they are. Yeah. And the wind was blowing pretty good, so even if I would have set up a spotter, I don't think I could have counted rings on him. You know, it just, it's, you know, but it was kind of I was going up there to kill him. You know, when you hunt him out of a boat like that, it's kind of, you leave at first light or before dark and you get up to him at about noon, and, you know, you're back to the boat in time for lunch kind of thing.
Right.
So it's like, you know, when I left the boat, I knew I was going to kill him. You know, I'd kind of already looked over a bunch of goats, and it was just kind of a weekend trip. So, you know, it was kind of crunched for time. And, but no, I'm super happy with him. I just, he's just not the one, you know, he's not for that one epic life-size mount, but it kind of worked out good anyway, because I have been a part of like one of those, you know, almost Boone or Crockett billies. And
okay,
man, I tell you what, that meat was not very good.
Oh yeah. I've heard that.
Yeah. But when they're, you know, young like that, that nanny I had, awesome meat. This same thing with this billy. Mm-hmm. And also too, that was an October hunt, and so they weren't rutting yet. Mm. And I think that plays a big part in it also.
For sure.
So he was, yeah, really good eating, you know, on the flip side of that. But yeah, it was really hard. I you know, cut the back half of him off on the mountain of his hide, and just for a shoulder mount, and it really hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
You know, because I still have that lower 48 mentality where, like, this is a once in a lifetime animal to most people.
Yeah, you for know? Sure.
And it's engraved into my head. I, you know, it's like, dude, this is a life sized animal to 98% of the hunters out there.
Oh yeah.
You know, and so
I do it.
Like I said,
in a heartbeat.
It definitely hurt my feelings. But yeah, it's not the one, you know. I mean, I still got some years left to hunt goats, so
man, it's something I definitely want to come and do. Like
it's definitely the cheapest hunt, you know, as far as, you know, you gotta have a guide.
Yeah.
But
what does that hunt run you, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, I think they're, depending on who you go with, they're anywhere from like 10 to 15,000.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah,
so I mean, but like I said, that's half the price of, you know,
oh yeah,
cheaper grizz, which is the other two you have to have an outfitter for. So they're definitely the cheaper one. There's some good opportunities though, but if you don't hunt them on Kodiak is actually a pretty easy goat hunt as far as terrain goes.
Uh-huh.
You know, yeah, you're still going to catch them in some pretty gnarly cliffs that are hard to maneuver. But as far as like brush, on the north end of the island, you can still get into some pretty thick brush. But a lot of guys fly in and hunt them on the south end of the island, and it's pretty open. And so, you know, you're just kind of walking in some thick grass. You might have some patches of alders, but it's not that bad. Mm-hmm. But when you go hunt them on the mainland, like in the Sound or even down towards like Ketchikan, which is, you know, one of the better areas to hunt goats, just because the goats get aged because of the landscape.
Right.
It's hard to get to them. Lots of cliffs, thick, just rainforest, nasty, Devil's Club infested. Ugh. Garbage. It's just horrible. You come out with more freaking stickers in your hands than,
oh god,
you know, pip pop. And they're different than like the cactus, you know, in Arizona. These things are like just all micro stickers.
Yeah, and you just can't get them out, and they start itching. And
yeah. So
it's like the salmon berries.
Yeah, kind of. Man, I don't even know how to really explain it. It's like almost like a Canadian thistle or a Russian, or not a Russian, or like a bull thistle, you know, where there's just a bunch of micro stickers.
Yeah.
And so they end up, you know, you can't get a lot of them out, but without tweezers.
Yep.
Or let them fester and pop them.
Ugh.
So.
Sounds like awesome time. No, but I kind of want to do the boat hunt. I know I've looked into it a little bit, but
yeah.
What time of year did you go? Did you go in the September or October?
So was it like the 1st of October, I think.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I wanted to do. And I wanted to couple that with like the blacktail deal, but.
Oh yeah. Yep. Yeah. So basically what happened is, you know, like goats open through September, but I'm like, especially this season, I was still hunting sheep. Mm-hmm. And actually what ended up happening is I got blown off the mountain by a blizzard by myself on my last sheep hunt this year. And, I'm literally driving home and my buddy calls me, who's got the boat. And he was like, "Hey, I think I'm going to go look for goats this weekend. You want to go?" And in my mind, I'm thinking just what I described to you, fighting brush, you know, and I just got my ass kicked coming off the mountain off that blizzard, and I was tired and, you know, well, just strung out through all the sheep season, you know?
Right.
And I says, you know, I just, like, to be honest, I don't have the mental fight in me right now to go hike up those mountains looking for goats. I just don't. I'm just exhausted, you know? And that, I never thought those words would come out of my mouth, you know?
Right.
But I was like, just being honest, you know, like I wasn't happy, you know, like I would have been a freaking grouch the whole time. You know, it's like, it's not worth it. I'm not going to go. And so anyways, he goes out by himself and end up killing a nice billy.
Oh, wow.
And because it all happened so fast for him, like the next weekend comes around about Wednesday, Thursday, he sends me a message. He's like, "So I think I'm going back out this." Like, absolutely.
Nice.
And I was kind of jealous/sad that I didn't get to be there for his too, you know. It's like,
right,
you know, I mean, that's part of it, helping
little FOMO.
Yeah, well, helping your friend pack his out too, you know, which it is what it is. But yeah, so he hooked me up and took me out to where he saw some of those goats the weekend before. And so yeah, so we were in Sound, and a lot of those units in the Sound are their quota units.
Okay.
So if you're not out there somewhat early in the season,
they close.
They close.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, I think it was we went out that weekend, and I think a week and a half later, that unit I shot mine, it ended up closing. So, and they do it on a point system. So, like someone goes in there and shoots a nanny, it's more points.
Right.
So, you know, they could end up getting close faster.
We do something like that with bear here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, the quota is a female quota only. So if X amount of sows get killed in that unit, then it closes. If nothing but boars are killed, then I don't think they close the unit. It's weird.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I think Idaho has some similar with lions.
Okay.
Actually, now that I think about it. they have female quotas. But yeah, no, that boat hunt's a good time. I mean, if the weather's decent.
Yeah, I heard you could spend a lot of time on the boat too.
Yeah,
twiddling thumbs.
Yep, back in a cove somewhere out of the wind. And that wind gets bad. It's a learning curve. That same buddy of mine who took me on that hunt was out there doing some trapping. Oh, I guess what would that have been? December, early December, I think. And had some unexpected weather move in, and I guess he damn near sunk the boat.
Oh fuck!
You know, had some 12-foot waves coming over the bow, and it's just a 30-footer. I mean, it's like for mainland purposes, it's plenty big, but out there, that ain't big enough.
Yeah, and, that's scary.
Yeah, he almost sunk it. I guess some waves had enough waves coming over the bow hard enough that it broke his windshield.
Oh shit!
Like, I mean, he was scared. He was legit scared and should have been, you know, I mean, so he learned a hard lesson that day. And it's like, I told him, I said, you know, there ain't one commercial fisherman that doesn't have a story like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how you learn.
Yeah. So, that's nuts. That's been my only reservation. Like, I don't know, man. I don't like being out in the open water.
Well, depending on where you want to go on that boat hunt, you know, if you do want in like that southeast, like that Ketchikan area, you know, a lot of those inlets are fairly protected,
right?
You know, you're not going to have the big open water stuff like the Sound can get, or even Kodiak's pretty bad.
Yeah,
but a lot what does happen with Kodiak is, like, say you get flown into like Old Harbor and then do a boat hunt out of Old Harbor. Well, Old Harbor sits in off the ocean quite a bit, or, you know, off the main water. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's a lot of protected coves and stuff that they hunt out of there. And like, I mean, personally, if you wanted to do the goat deer combo, that's something more I would look into is that south end of Kodiak. I mean, just for the deer quality, I think you're going to have better opportunities at the deer.
Well, so I'm looking at definitely, I'm going to put something together for 2022.
Yeah,
I mean, at this point, man, shit, I'm about to turn 45, and if I don't go do some of these things now, I don't foresee me doing them later on, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So.
Nope, I've said it before, and it's the whole reason that I moved to Alaska. It's like, I mean, I'm young and dumb, don't have a family, and I never foresaw myself spending that kind of money to go shoot one animal.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a lot.
So I just moved up there, and now that I've moved up there, I mean, I've killed, oh man, I don't know. I mean, probably close to $250,000 worth of guided hunts when if you pencil it out.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And, it's, you know, money that I never would have spent.
Right.
You know, it's just not my mentality. It's like, I'd rather go on a high country mule deer hunt than go spend, or, you know, go on 10 high country mule deer hunts versus going and spend that kind of money for one animal.
Yes.
You know, but
it's tough to pull the trigger especially when you're at a certain level of annual income, you know, it's like,
right.
And even then, I know guys who, you know, make far more money than me, and it's just like, it's still a hard.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Know, it's, I,
it's a hard it's, thing to do.
Yeah. Yep. So that's why I moved up, and, man, I've had some pretty crazy encounters. I mean, sheep hunting last year is pretty cool. Same story as me being a penny pincher. That's, the last 3 years, you know, I've been sheep hunting, and I have yet to do a fly-in hunt. Mm-hmm. For sheep, I have done a fly-in hunting on Kodiak, but that's just because that's the only way to do it. You know, you get there and you fly to the south end, and I did that. That first year I hunted there 3 years ago, and we shot a handful of deer, a goat, and a couple of the reindeer that live there. Okay. So it was like, you know, a full-on awesome Kodiak trip. Had pretty decent weather. And that one's going to be tough to beat. But nonetheless, it's like, you know, the plane ride from the town of Kodiak to the south end is $3,000 round trip. But you split it, you know, we took me and two guys, so it was, you know, $1,000 a piece.
Okay.
And when you look at it that way, it's like, that's no different than going and buying Idaho tags.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that's kind of how you have to look at it. It's, but for like a lot of resident hunters, I mean, that's a lot of money to just go spend, negotiate some deer. And it's like, for guys like me who have hunted, you know, multiple states and whatnot, it's like, oh, you just have to look at it as another non-resident hunt.
Right.
You know, and try to get the most out of it.
Oh, for sure. So, I mean, there's been plenty of non-resident hunts that by the time it's all said and done, I'm spending $3,500 to $4,000, you know?
Yeah.
Especially when I was filming, you know, and I had a camera guy coming with me and all that. Fuck, man, it's been five grand easy on a hunt, you know?
Yeah. Yep. And you know, I've never been one that's kind of leaned towards that direction on guided hunts, you know, paying to go hunt kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, you know, now you're like talking about that kind of money. It's like, okay, well, by the time you go on a non-resident hunt, you spend all the time and money to do it in fuel, in food, in, you know, housing, if you do a hotel, which I don't because I'm a cheap ass. But it's like all of a sudden now, you know, like you said, you're looking at $2,000, maybe even $3,000 to go on a hunt that's 2 or 3 states away.
Right.
And then in my mind, the back of my mind, I'm thinking, especially down there in Arizona hunting those coos, I'm thinking, and they say like a guided coos hunts across the border is only like 5,000, and they pay, you know, they have the food, they're putting up the housing, and it's like, well, really it's not that much more money.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of it. And
yeah, for sure.
You know, that's one thing I've been kicking around in the back of my head, but
being a guide here, and especially now in the last few years, I used to have a real problem. I wouldn't say a real problem. I never had a problem with it. I never had like an ethical problem with it at all. But
no,
I had a problem with spending the money to go hunt somewhere. You know, I'm like, oh, why do I need a guide? I guide myself. I mean, you know, what do I need a guide for? I'll tell you what, man. I think I might actually start doing some more guided hunts, like, you know, like that, or at least private land, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's just like, my time is so, especially now I got 3 kids. It wasn't so bad when I had 2, but I got 3. And it's just, time is precious. It's like, I don't want to go down and spend 7 days and come home empty handed. I just don't want to come home empty handed, you know, like,
No, exactly.
If I'm spending the money, I want to, like, I've been seriously considering, you know, looking at, because I got a land lease in South Dakota. So this is kind of what did it for me. You know, I guide hunts there and I always hunt there for myself also. And, you know, hunting private land where you don't have to deal with, man, I mean, this year down south where we were hunting with, me and Charles were hunting in Arizona. Like, I can't tell you how many stupid shit we ran into. Like, I just don't even want to deal with it anymore. I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting old. Like, I mean, it's nothing new. It's nothing new. I mean, it's gotten worse, but
yeah,
you know, I don't know, man. Part of me just wants to freaking go and have my hunt and enjoy myself and not have to worry about.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, the idea of like getting land leases and stuff to me sounds fantastic. I'd love to have like 4 or 5 places that I could just go hunt every year and just be, you know, just enjoy my time instead of battling with every other schmo out there. And I don't know. I mean, I'm just, like I said, maybe I'm just a little jaded and bitter from this past hunt, but it's just like, I don't know. I just,
But yeah, I kind of went down a little rabbit hole there, but what, you know, like what I was saying is it's like, I'm not paying for, you know, these plane rides going in on these sheep hunts. And so, I'm doing it at just, you know, minimal cost. I mean, it's you know, the couple $100 it cost me in fuel to get to a trailhead kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And then like this year, me and a buddy actually parked one of our pickups on each end of this mountain range.
Okay.
And we ended up hiking 50 miles straight through.
Oof.
And, you know, it was a 10-day hunt. You know, some days you did, you know, 5-6 miles, some days you did 12. It just kind of depended on that day and the terrain and what you saw.
Right.
And, but yeah, that was pretty cool. It was pretty fun to cover that much country. And you know, just, I learned a bunch of stuff that I've never been into before. saw some rams, but also saw some people. So, you know, like one of the legal rams we ended up finding, there were already a couple guys on it, and you know, that's fine, but it's, you know, it's just kind of shocking that, that there were guys willing to be that far in there also.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the other thing too. You know, back in the day, everybody, oh, just, you know, just hike, just I'd out hike everybody. But now it's that day and age that everybody's doing the same thing. Like, you know, cause all the cool kids are talking about it, and, and now it's not even you're not an anomaly anymore, you know, it's just the norm. So,
but yeah, so we saw a handful of rams, got really close, kind of that same thing, the bow hunter and me, the one group of rams, we popped over on top of them at like 40 yards, and which was still really awesome because I got some really cool video of them. But yeah, they were all, there was a 7-year old that was like a three quarter curl, but not very heavy. And then a 6-year old that was just a beast, super heavy, still probably only like a 3/4 curl, but man, he's going to be something special here in 2-3 years.
Nice.
So yeah, it was pretty cool. And then after that hunt, I kind of knew I was going to be, so like, we, you know, I'll have a couple Sherpas come up, fly up from the lower 48 that just want to, you know, go on a sheep hunt.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, I kind of help pay for their flight or whatever, get them up here. Cause I mean, they're up here to help me too. You know, it's
right.
I feel like it's worth it for me to help, you know, cover some costs because they're donating their time to me essentially. But yeah, so I had to get those Sherpas back to the airport, and then that whole next week I was going to be running solo, and so I decided to head into one of the archery only areas up there and give sheep a go with my bow.
Nice.
And because you know, I bow hunted for muleys a lot, you know, before I moved up there, but really since I moved up there, I kind of picked up the rifle and never put it down.
Yeah.
And the thing is there's up there specifically, there's not a lot of like benefits to hunting with a bow. There's not a lot of archery only areas. There's no special seasons for them unless there's a couple draw seasons, but just as far as like, you know, a lot of the seasons down here are set up, you know, it can be a big benefit to hunt with a bow. Just better seasons, better opportunities. Well, that's not the case up there. It's kind of just a general season. And so you're going to be competing with rifles, you know, and that makes it hard.
Right.
And then on top of that, you know, if you're not hunting solo, hunting with a friend, and well, then, you know, legal sheep are so hard to come by that it's kind of hard to, come up on a ram and spend 3 or 4 days on him trying to get him with a bow. And then it's like, you know, then move on to your buddies, you know, to try to help him get a sheep kind of thing, you know, so it kind of makes it difficult. So I figured with that week of me being solo, I headed into some country I'd never been into, and sure shit, I ended up finding the legal ram, and he was by himself.
Oh, wow.
So that was pretty rare. And I spent 3 days with him and learned a lot. Just babysat him and watched him, and like the second day I was on him, the closest I could get to him was 400 yards.
Oh wow.
Just the way the lay of the land was, it's wide open, you know, rock with some tundra type stuff, and he put himself in some pretty big rock shoots, and so I could not come in from above him. I had to kind of come in from the side, and which really limited my striking areas essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And, but yeah, long story short on that, I made a pretty bold move on him really, and moved my camp in. It's kind of hard to explain without seeing this picture, but like that, those rock shoots fed into this one big creek.
Uh-huh.
And, then that wide into another pretty good, finger that went up. Just to the left of all those rock shoots. And so it was like the next kind of main drainage. Well, on the one evening, one thing I learned about especially solo sheep, in the evenings when he gets up to feed, a lot of times due to the steepness of the mountain, he would feed with his head uphill. And I mean, he would either be feeding to the side or feeding uphill. And, you know, with, you know, those horns weighed, you know, 20 pounds on top of their head, that I think it's easier for them that they don't have to reach down as far on the uphill side, you know, just whatever's easiest to get their food is what they're going to do. And, but when he would do that, he would, you know, he'd have his ass end towards me. Hmm. And so he'd be completely oblivious to everything around him. So at that point, you know, like that second evening, I waited for him to get up and feed. And sure enough, he fed with his head uphill. And I walked right up this drainage that he could totally see me. I was fully exposed. I don't know, probably 1,000 yards from him at that point.
Okay.
But, you know, up this drainage and got into that Y that went to the left that was out of sight of his main area that I had been watching him in, you know, with access to water, a good little chunk of brush that I stuck my tent in, buried it into, and then had what I felt like was more accessible to striking distance. You know, mm-hmm. if he put himself in a position to stalk, I could be there fairly quickly. And so I watched him that evening. It got dark and he was feeding towards the left, towards the ridge that I was hiding behind. So I figured in the morning he would be, you know, close to that ridge and I'd have a good opportunity for a stalk. So I wake up in the morning and I set my alarm for like 4:30 because it got light about 5, or starts to get, you know, gray light at about 5 at that time.
Okay.
And I was so tired. Well, I was quite a bit farther north in Alaska on this hunt. And, you know, it didn't get dark till really 10:30, 11 o'clock. And then it's daylight at 4:30.
Wow.
So you're not sleeping much.
No.
And no. I was really, really exhausted, you know, also coming off that 50-mile trip from the week before. You know,
oh, yeah, I'm just,
like, my body's pretty tired. And I wake up at 4:30 on that alarm and I'm like, it's too dark. I'm going back to bed. And so I hit the snooze button and shoot, I think I rolled over and cracked my eyes open and I could tell it was starting to get light again. And I go, okay, like, you got to force myself to get out of bed today. Cause I really felt like today's the day I'm going to get an opportunity at this ram. So I roll out of bed. I forced myself to get out of bed. I did not want to. And I need to get some water. And I walked the 45 yards down to the creek there and just oblivious to the world, right? I mean, I'm still half asleep.
Uh-huh.
And I go down there, fill up my water bottles, walk back up. And right as I get to the tent, I look over the tent.
Uh-huh.
And that dang ram was standing behind my tent about 450 yards.
Oh, shit.
Feeding. And he had no idea I was there. Like, I got super lucky he didn't pick up my movement. But then it was like, oh, shit, game on. And because where he was, he had actually gone out of his little basin that he was in up over that ridge
and
was
yours.
In the drainage that my tent was in. And which was a good opportunity because I could go drop back down to the creek and go around that little finger and come up where he was normally and get on his level. And from what I had figured out by watching him those couple days is, it's like I said, he would feed across that basin and then he'd bed on the left side, you know, all day. Well, right. Then in the evening he'd get up and by the next morning he's on the right hand side of it. So he just kind of fed back and forth across it throughout the night. So in my mind, if I got in position that evening, he was going to get up, feed back towards his, what I felt was his safe zone, and, you know, walk right in front of me. It's, you know, one way or another. So I hustle up there just in case I could get an opportunity that morning, or I mean, maybe he was going to walk back that morning. I don't know. I mean, you know, this was 5:30 in the morning and there's still 2.5 hours roughly before the sun even warms things up.
Right.
And so, you know, who knows what he's going to do. So I get up there, come around that little finger parallel with him. and shoot, I'm already 130 yards from him.
Oh, geez.
You know, I mean, I'm just right there. So then he kind of starts feeding down into the crotch of a little finger there between him and I. And so as he fed down, I would creep closer. You know, it's like just keeping him, you know, basically playing peekaboo with him, where I can, you know, my head is exposed to him, but that's it. You right. know, I mean, because it's wide open. I mean, there's nothing to hide behind. So we crept to the point where I had him at 107 yards. Ugh. And I mean, yes, I'm definitely the guy that practices, you know, beyond 130 yards. And it's like, yes, I probably could have hit him. But in my mind, it's like, no, he's definitely, he has no idea I'm here. I'm, you know, it's a low percentage shot. He's feeding right. closer. Like, I had everything going for me. So he fed there for a while. I had him at 107 for probably 5-10 minutes. And he never fed through that cut and up on my side. And then he finally turned and headed back up away from me, which then at the same time, I have to back out and keep that hill between him and me, kind of thing.
Right.
And so then, you know, he fed back up to the top, bedded on that little finger, and there I sat at 135 yards for all day.
Wow.
And so that was super awesome, though, you know, just sitting there staring, watching, you know, and learning their behavior. And so then he gets up at like 1-2 o'clock in the afternoon, feeds back into the crotch away from me. So he goes the opposite way.
Okay.
So in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, if I can get to the bottom of this cut, you know, it'll be about a 65, 70 yard shot to where he's bedded. Cause what I, again, watching him for the 2-3 days before that, he would get up midday, he'd feed and down into those cuts, but then he, you know, an hour or so later, he'd come back up and he'd bed back in the exact same bed.
Okay.
And so I knew if I just had to get a little bit closer to that bed and I'd be money. And I sat there for 10 minutes probably and just debated this in my head, like, do I go? Do I not? Like, what's he going to do? Is he going to come back out? And finally I said, screw it, I'm doing it. Like, I really think this could work. And I made it about 30 yards across that face. And, you know, I'm watching every step I take. And, all, you know, so my head, I'm looking down quite a bit because I'm just trying to be super quiet. And then I look up and that sucker's standing there staring at me.
Oh, shit.
You know, it's like, oh, I was so bummed. I mean, it was just so frustrated because, in, you know, again, the game plan of me sitting there and waiting until 9 o'clock is when he would get up in the evenings. Mm-hmm. And I just know he was going to feed back to the right and cross my path. Well, you know, I'd obviously have to play the wind, whether or not I had to be above him or below him, mm-hmm. or if I was just going to wait and stay on the same level as him and get him as soon as he comes across that drainage. You know, it's like, I don't know. It's all hearsay at this point, but it was a solid plan. And that was definitely a bold move I made, but it could have just as easily paid off. I mean,
Hey, you never know, you know?
No. And it's like, I was, you know, in striking distance, like realistically, I could have hit the damn thing. I mean, he was not in a very good bow range, but it's like, so I was pretty frustrated in the moment. I'm like, I know I could have hit him. It's like,
yeah, nah, don't start doing that.
I know, but it's so, but I was just so mad. Like I instantly knocked an arrow and just shot it at 107 yards just to know that I could have, mm-hmm. and, you know, blew up my arrow, burnt a broadhead, but I only missed by 4 inches.
Wow.
So it's like, yeah, I totally could have killed him, but no, I mean, I've never shot anything really that far anyway. So it's like, you know, 80 is about my comfort zone. You know,
yeah,
it's
that's like, me too. Now
they're 80, I know I can whack them.
I've taken and killed a few animals that longer than that, but I've definitely wrangled myself back down to 80. I have a fixed pin sight, no slider, nothing, you know, seven pins. I got 20 to 80. And if it's not at 80, 80 or less, I'm not shooting. So,
right. Yeah. And that's kind of where I was at. And that's why it didn't fly. But it's like, man, I knew I could do it. But I didn't. And it was fun. And I learned so much in those 3 days. And it took me a day to kind of come down off of just being mad at the world. So I hiked out that night. And then I slept in the pickup and drove home the next day. And that next day of me driving, you know, by myself for 12 hours or whatever it was.
Oh, geez.
Everything in Alaska is at least 6 hours away.
Right.
So it's not, you get used to driving, I tell you what. But I just processed it all and like realized like how much fun I had and what I did. You know, I mean, like this was the first time I had even attempted sheep with a bow, and
you almost made it happen.
I almost made it happen. I really did, you know, and so in an area I'd never been into, you know, I had literally blindly hiked into this area. And so it was fun.
That's a win, man. You know?
Oh yeah. Yeah, totally. Like that, you know, like I said, I ended up killing the sheep this year, but I got to hunt so much more.
Right.
You know, I got to see so many animals and now I know for this next season, mm-hmm. I know where a handful of 7 year olds / 3/4 curls that are going to be legal this coming season. So
nice.
I know where they are this year.
Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to check out daysinthewild.com and be sure to give us a review on iTunes. Thank you. And we'll check you out on the next episode.